Northern Honshu, Japan, where ancient mountains rise through drifting fog, where the forests whisper, the oceans roar, and the land itself remembers everything. This is a place shaped by violence and beauty alike. Typhoons tear through the skies, earthquakes shake the bones of the earth, snowstorms bury the past beneath layers of silence. And beneath it all, something's watching. Misawa Air Base stands on land far older than any military installation, ground steeped in history, tradition, and spirits that never left. For the men and women stationed there, the dangers weren't always visible on radar, and they weren't always human. Tonight, we follow the true experiences of Air Force Security Police, trained observers, military working dog handlers, men and women taught to identify threats, secure perimeters, and trust what they see. But what happens when what you see didn't exist? In 1991, Airman First Class Christine Watts arrived at Misawa expecting patrols, procedures, and protocol. What she encountered instead were shadow figures, impossible lights, entities that moved without sound, and moments that defied every rule she had been trained to follow. Alongside her, Rob Watts, helping document, investigate, and bring these experiences into the light. Accounts carried for decades that are now finally being told. These aren't campfires, my friend. These are not rumors. These are firsthand accounts, documented, lived, and carried for decades by those who experienced them. Tonight, we open the gates to the ghosts of Misawa Air Base. And once you step inside, nothing feels the same, not even the shadows. I'm your host on this journey, Dave Schrader, and joining me now on the Paranormal 360 radio show from the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline are Christine and Rob Watts. Thank you both so much for joining me here this evening.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Fascinating book, man, and I love the fact that you're coming forward to talk about this, embrace it, and I have been doing live events for 19 years. And have met people from every walk of life. And what I always love is I get the military personnel that'll be there and they're nodding their heads, kind of listening. And then they'll take me aside and they're like, I got to tell you something. I don't want you to ever use my name. I don't ever want to talk about this again in public, but I need to tell somebody what I saw. And how many military installations around the world are crazy haunted? A lot of the barracks where the families live have strange experiences. So I really appreciate that you've decided to take your history and the stories that have come forward and put them out for us to share with our audience. And let me start with you real quickly, Christine. Prior to going there to Misawa, did you have a belief or a theory on the paranormal at all?
Yes, actually, I've been experiencing the paranormal ever since I can remember. It's followed throughout the family history and, you know, with myself. So it was something that scared me, but it wasn't out of the norm.
All right. And when you say that it kind of followed through the family, does that mean that through your generations, you've Yes. seen and witnessed ghosts? Or are you talking alien abductions, Bigfoot recipe trade-offs? I don't know. What does paranormal mean to you?
Well, definitely the ghosts. But also too, I had a couple of experiences as a child with a possible UFO. The other phenomena came a lot later through life with different experiences in different places we've lived. But yeah, in the beginning, it was mainly ghost spirits. Being able to see them, hear them. Sometimes I wasn't aware that who I was talking with was actually a ghost. Because as a child, when you see other children, you think they're just like you, not realizing that they're wearing funny clothes for a reason. And they're not really interacting with you for a reason, you know.
But it was from a very early age on. Yes. Do you remember your first ghost-like encounter?
The one that my parents tell me about was before I have any real memory of it, But they said I used to talk to somebody when I was a baby. And they would see me, you know, just baby talking to somebody and laughing. And I'd have like these conversations they couldn't understand. And I would try to offer food. And, you know, it wasn't until one night my mom woke up in the middle of the night. My dad was working his shift. He was in the Air Force as well. And she saw a man standing in her bedroom doorway wearing a top hat. And then he tipped his hat to her and disappeared. And that was the last time she saw him. And that was my last interaction.
A fancy ghost.
Yes.
Not only did he get the spooky guy with the hat in the door, but he gives you the little, good day, governor.
Yeah, exactly.
In manners.
Yeah.
It certainly does. Rob, were you aware of Christine's supernatural past when you met her?
When I met her, I would say no. But not too long after that. We talked, pretty much. I actually picked her up from the airport when she arrived. So I kind of got to jump on it quick, and, we were dating pretty quick and got married really quick. So, but yeah, we did a lot of talking and
so she already kicked you off with her talk of strange supernatural experience.
Oh no, I'd already been in Masal for a couple of years. So I had already seen a lot of really weird stuff, at that point. So I was like, you know, she's telling me about her stuff and her stories. And I'm like, just wait, you're going to see a lot of weird stuff here.
Oh, so you two were meant to meet then, weren't you?
Well, it's been,
34 years.
So,
well, congratulations. We got there. I got about 2 minutes left in this segment, but Christine, you teased the fact that there may have been UFO encounters. How old were you when that began?
The first one was when I was 5. And okay. Believe it or not, it was at a drive-in theater.
Really? But can you tell us a little bit more about it? Were you seeing Close Encounters? Because, Christine, that was just a movie.
It was the 70s. No, but... I saw him, and I didn't understand why no one else saw it, but I wasn't into the movie. It was something my parents wanted to see. So I was looking out the car window, and I saw what I describe as a huge ship hovering above the area with lights all around the bottom. This was in Colorado Springs. And I remember thinking, why is no one else paying attention to this? And then it just took off.
Well, again, if it's kind of above you as opposed to in front of the, like, it's not hovering over the screen, right? It's just kind of up and above
everybody. It was above all the cars up in the sky.
Mm-hmm. And you were too young to have fogged up the windows, right? So there was at a drive-in theater. Yeah. So, oh, wow, that's fascinating. You saw that. Did you have the wherewithal even at that age to say, that's a UFO or a craft?
No, I just thought it was really strange because my dad was an air traffic controller. So I had grown up around aircraft, and that was unlike anything I'd ever seen. And I believe it was before I ever saw Close Encounters, but it was, I remember thinking, cause it was huge. And I kept wondering, looking around, and everyone else is just focused on the screen. Why is no one else seeing what I'm seeing? But I didn't.
That's what we find in this field, you know, right? There's so much of it that's taking place in plain sight. We're going to have to take a break. We'll come back. We've got Christine and Rob Watts for the entirety of tonight's show, both hours. We'll get back with that right after this. Welcome back to the program. We are Paranormal 360, your home for all things strange and supernatural every Sunday night. I'm Dave Schrader, your host. Joining me, Christine and Rob Watts. Christine has a book. As a matter of fact, you don't have to just listen to the words being told today. We are only going to barely scratch the surface, even over this two-hour period. Her book is called The Ghosts of Misawa Air Base and Other Phenomena, Christine Watts. We'll have a link for that on today's program guide as well. But you know what I'm going to tell you, folks? Don't just buy the book and read it. Rate and review it, because that goes a long way to help our authors get recognized and have their book shared to a much larger audience. So as we found out, from a very early age, Christine began having strange encounters with ghosts, seeing a craft in the sky during a drive-in movie venture. And her husband, Rob, not too surprised at the weirdness she had encountered, because he had been in Misawa for a while. And was already aware of the strangeness that was going on there. Rob, how long had you been in Misawa, and were you also part of the military?
Yeah, I was same thing. We had the exact same job. We were both law enforcement specialists in the Air Force, which at the time was security police. They changed the name since. And we were both canine. So I'd been there a couple of years. She came in, was replacing some of the people who had left. So yeah, we did the same job, the exact same job.
So Rob, tell me this, working with canine, you know, obviously many of us in the field feel that animals are very prone to seeing and witnessing supernatural phenomena. Prior to Christine getting there, would the dogs ever react to unseen forces?
Always.
Really?
And you got to remember, our dogs are not, well, at the time, the dogs have changed a little bit in their training, but the dogs at the time, this was, for me, it was the late 80s, early 90s. And a lot of these dogs were trained by I call them the OGs of canine, the guys who were Vietnam dog handlers.
Wow.
So these dogs were a little bit different than what they are now. I mean, they were over-aggressive, a lot of instincts. And I can tell you firsthand, I mean, we had one handler actually wreck the car because their dog went nuts seeing somebody in a gate shack that wasn't there. She saw it too, but the dog went nuts trying to get to it. And she actually wrecked
the car. These are highly trained animals that are to react to threats, things that should not be where they are.
They've saved my butt many times. So,
and then they would not react to things like your fellow employees and soldiers, correct?
No, I mean, you got to remember a lot of times we were put in situations, especially at that time. This was before Desert Storm. We were still thinking, you know, jungle warfare, that kind of thing. So, a lot of times we were put on the perimeters. We'd be 3 to 5 clicks outside of a base perimeter, pulling security, being early warning for the rest of the base. So we're out in the middle of nowhere.
So when this dog is alerting and you're early warning, this dog is definitely seeing something.
He's picking something up. Whether it's sight, scent, sometimes you can tell it's just a smell. You know, you learn to read your dogs. I mean, you really have to. And you can tell when all of a sudden, you know, that nose goes up and you can see the nose twitching almost. And you're like, what's he picking up? Because
how do you define that then, Rob? Not to get too far off track, but animals have amazing hearing and scent glands. They could be hearing something taking place 2 miles away and they stop and cock their head. And we automatically think, oh, it's looking at the top of the stairs. It's really just turning its head to hear better. We're suddenly thinking we've got, you know, Nosferatu making his way into our living room when he's really just paying attention to sirens 2 miles away or smelling a fire that we're not even picking up on yet a mile away, right? I mean, how do you know when there's an immediacy to the danger as opposed to they're just sensing something?
Well, in that particular situation, when we're out there, we're out 3 to 5 clicks away from the base, there's nothing else out in front of us. For miles and miles and miles. And within a few minutes, you know, the dog's already smelled everything he wanted to smell out of curiosity, whether it was, you know, critters running around the woods, whatever, snakes. He's already smelled everything he wanted to smell. Now he's comfortable. And that's when he's comfortable that he picks up something that you go, uh-oh, you know, what do we have? You know, is it something or not something?
Would it become... when he would start to react, would you begin hearing footsteps or things moving towards you that you necessarily couldn't see or hearing something like that so that there was corroboration? It wasn't just cuckoo dog. It was a dog picking up on something and you could see it or hear it moving towards you.
I've had situations where it's both. You hear them. You can, you know, Misawa is up way up north. You get a lot of snow in the winter. You can hear somebody walking in the snow.
Crunching sound. Yeah, I'm in Minnesota. Yeah. I'm aware of that noise. Yeah.
Right. Cracking the sticks, you know, or you may see something. You may see a shadow dart. So, you know, being the people we were, especially dog handlers, you know, when you have your dog, you're not scared of anything. So you're like, okay, let's go find out what that was. You know, it might be somebody sneaking up on me. And then you get over there where the shadow was, and there's nothing there. Or, you know, and then she's had some interesting experiences with her dog. And individuals, I guess, mm-hmm. is the best way to put it.
All right. Well, Christine, you were going to add something to what we were talking about before, please.
Well, you were correct that, you know, a lot of times when, you know, the dogs are responding, it could be something that they're, you know, hearing out there. What really got me is these dogs are not afraid of anything. They're trained to take a bullet for you. When they start whining and they place themselves behind you during a situation, then you know you've got something that is just out of the ordinary.
Now, are these, for lack of a better term, attack dogs as well? Like if there is an intruder, you can set them free and they will run at that human and take them down. So when they're Scooby-Dooing and they're getting behind you and going, you know, you're having a problem. Oh, that's got to be, guys, I'm not an outdoors person. If my dog suddenly has to hide behind me,
yes,
just dig a hole because I'm dead at that point. I don't know what's going to happen next. That's terrifying. Walk me through that, Christine. When your dog reacts that way, what is your inclination?
Oh, crap.
Are you calling for backup? Are you walking the other way?
The very first time that it happened, I did call it in because I'm like, what is going on? I'm hearing it. I'm seeing it. My dog's responding. Now my dog's putting herself behind me. What is going on? So I'm thinking, you know, it was during an exercise where all these inspection teams were coming through. They're going to put you to the test for your job. And we're out in the middle of nowhere and she does this. And I'm thinking, how good are these teams? But I've been chasing this thing for a while. And I could never see it, but I could hear it. And at one point I heard it actually like trip and fall and hit the ground in front of me. And I'm looking and I cannot see anything in front of me. She's putting herself back behind me. And I'm like, I've had enough. So it was time to call it in.
You said he'd been tracking this thing. So you were tracking and then the dog got to a point where the dog was no longer wanting to track. It was wanting to retreat.
Yes, because she kept grabbing the whatever she was doing, the scent, the sound, whatever she was seeing, pulling me towards it. And then she would lose it. And then I'd have to try to redirect her to get her back on track. She would lose it again. And then at one point she stopped, looked the other way and went behind me and stayed right behind me. And I went, oh, what am I dealing? And this was my very first experience with Misawa Paranormal.
All right, we're going to take our next break. We'll be back. I'm not going. That is terrifying. We've got more to discuss right after this. Looking for a getaway with a little history and maybe a little haunting? Well, come experience the Palmer House Hotel, Restaurant, and Pub in beautiful Sauk Center, Minnesota, where the past isn't just remembered, it lingers. Located at 500 Sinclair Lewis Avenue, this historic and famously haunted hotel has welcomed travelers for over a century. Some guests come for the ghosts and stay for the incredible food, handcrafted drinks, and the comforts of home. I'm Dave Schrader, the new owner and caretaker of the Palmer House. And whether you're here for family fun, a relaxing weekend, or a brush with the paranormal, you're always welcome. Join us for great meals, warm hospitality, and maybe an unexpected encounter or two. Visit us online at thepalmerhousehotel.com or call 320-351-9100. That's 320-351-9100 to book your reservation. And be sure to follow the Palmer House Hotel on Facebook for events, history, and hauntings. The Palmer House Hotel. Come for the ghosts, stay for the food, drinks, and the comforts of home. Welcome back to the Paranormal 360. I'm Dave Schrader, and we have one heck of a story unfolding tonight. Christine and Rob Watts are joining us. Their book, The Ghosts of Misawa Air Base and Other Phenomena, is out and available. True Stories of the Paranormal. Christine Watts, the author of that book. Chilling stuff. Let's get right back into this. Once you get to that point, your dog wants nothing to do with this. You're canine specialist. You're out there. Your dog is trained to attack big, scary human beings. And now it's saying, no, 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 no. And it's behind you. You're calling in for help. That was your kind of first encounter with the paranormal there in Misawa. What is the resolution in that moment? Do you all just retreat? Or do you all have to get together and push past that fear and see what's out there?
Well, I mean, you have to just push through it. You still have a job to do. Calling it in, they actually sent a team out there, a fire team, to check it out. And when they came out in a Humvee, had a huge spotlight on top, started sweeping it throughout the area. There's nothing out there. So, of course, being the new girl, they're like, oh, she's seeing ghosts, giving me a hard time about it. And, there was one airman who was like, well, we have some big fox on base and, other animals. Maybe that's what I'm like, no, this is not a fox. This is not an animal. I was hearing something, but not seeing it. My dog's responding and then she's scared of it. And the same airman came up to me about 3 nights later. And it was at the end of the exercise and I was getting ready to turn in my weapon at the armory. And he says, the other night when you had your ghost thing, and I'm tired at this point. And I'm like, I just didn't want to be, ribbed about it anymore.
Right, right.
And so I got a little defensive and I turned around. He goes, you're not crazy. Apparently he had an experience where he was in his fire team. He was the last man in. And he kept hearing something running up behind him. And this is all in the same area. It's an area called Security Hill. And he turns around. There's nothing there. So they're still walking, going through the woods and in the washout areas. And he hears it again, running up against him, back behind. And he turns around. Nothing's there. So this happens a handful of times. At one point, he heard the heavy footsteps coming, felt something right up against his back, and he felt air blowing on the back of his neck. So he panics, turns around with his M16, and he's sure he's going to clock somebody in the head. And there's nobody there. Scared the living daylight out of him. I mean, he said he never experienced anything like that before, and he never wants to experience anything like that again. And that's what we found about Micellus. There's a lot of people. It was a shared experience with so many people. People came to the base skeptics and left believers.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you believe that what you were dealing with out in the woods was something entirely different than what you were dealing with in the barracks and on the base? Like, I don't want to lead too much, but were there cryptids and aliens roaming the perimeter and ghosts and specters inside?
You just really don't know, because the one thing that bothered me.
Well, you two keep looking at each other like, should we talk about this?
The one on Security Hill, the one I had an experience with, the one the guy had the experience with, and then another story with a captain and a tech sergeant that had an experience up there. The weirdest thing about it is when I've had experience with ghosts where you have the cold air, the cold spots.
Right.
When these things blow on you up in that area, it was hot air. And that's the one thing I could never figure out. What is different about the entities or entity of this area?
Security Hill was a very strange place. Yeah. Micellus Air Base.
I think you might be redacting a little bit there, Rob. seems like you amped it down a bit.
Just to put it mildly, well, what you have to understand is Micellus Air Base is about 50%, or at the time, was about 50% Air Force, about 40% Navy, about 10% Marine, 10% Navy, or Army. Okay. The main base dealt with, aircraft. Flight line area, every branch. Well, Air Force and Navy had aircraft. The other two were intel. Security Hill was all intelligence stuff. The largest, there was like three of them in the world. It was called an elephant cage antenna. It's since been demolished. But there was only three in the world. They listened to everybody, So there was always some kind of, mystique about Security Hill, and there's a lot of wooded area out there. In some particular instance, I've chased things for hours and then said, hey, had one of the patrols, I'm like, hey, hit your horn so I know which way to try and get back to, civilization. Wait, he'd honk the horn, and I never even heard him. I don't know how many miles, you know, that woods went. And that's just chasing stuff. And that's Security Hill, which was different than in the dorm or on base housing, which always seemed completely different.
Now, do you think, you know, just for the skeptic nation listening right now, and, you know, we should all be skeptical to a degree. Is there ever any point where you're thinking this is maybe Japanese intruders? These are people that military that have found a way that they can cloak themselves, and that we are just in something we have way up for our heads.
I had a particular incident. We had a string of incidents in the summer. Again, a lot of wooded areas out there. And we have security. The Air Force at the time, you had law enforcement, you had security. Law enforcement were basically like town cops, you know, normal. Security was responsible for the priority resources, guarding them, you know, that kind of thing. Well, those were security posts. They were out on Security Hill. Mm-hmm. They called one night. I was working. I was canine on the shift. Called, said they had an intruder, a sighting out by one of the priority resources. So, you know, you fly out there because canine, they're going to want us. Get out there. You know, where'd you see him? Where, you know, what'd you see? What, you know, well, I just saw shadows, but they were moving and there was three of them. And I'm like, okay, where did they hop the fence or where did they hop the ditch so I can get started there? As I hopped the ditch, a person jumped up and took off. Now, I just hopped this ditch 3-4 feet with my dog, and the person pops up out of the ditch and hauls, you know, hauls butt.
True.
So we get behind
it. We have to take a break. For the next part of the story, please insert $2.99, and we will be back with more right after this. All right. Welcome back to the program. This is exciting. Rob was just telling us about this experience. My question to him, do you think these are aliens, humans, cryptids? Are they the Japanese military finding a way to cloak themselves? This time they see something in the tree lines moving its way closer. He goes out, they hop a fence, and you see a being. Was it human, Rob, what you saw? At least, is that what it appeared to be?
I would say yes. I mean, that's what it appeared to be. All, you know, I couldn't get any detail. It was just all dark because it was nighttime too. And Macelle is kind of a weird mixture of jungle. So it's a weird mixture of foliage. But all you could see was dark. So we, you know, start trailing him, start chasing him. I could get glimpse of him every now and then, but I could never get close enough to catch him because security runs that side of the house. The security flight chief, who was the boss that night, he's with me, and he goes, because we've been doing this for a couple hours already. I mean, I'm getting worn out. Dog's getting worn out. We're going through razor grass and you know, bamboo, and we're getting cut up. I mean, it's just not a fun time. And at one point, he goes, can't you just let the dog go? I'm like, no, not if I can't see what he's going to get. Because if he gets out of my sight, I don't know who's going to get bit. I can't do that. But it was so bad that it was just getting to the point where it's like, I don't know what to do. We can't catch whoever this is.
It's become a military threat because it's come in that close and it's moving around. What is the hesitation from firing off a couple of rounds at whatever is out there or just setting your dog free to go attack and take it down?
Laws.
But that's what I'm asking, because you understand most of us morons just watch Rambo movies and the first reaction is let the dog go or start shooting through the woods. But why that's important for us to understand, there are laws. You can't just start.
Right. With the canine.
Right.
Basic rule of thumb is, you know, if you see a target, you have all these, you know, all these conditions where you can release them and you release them. If he ever gets out of your sight, you got to call him straight back. He can never be out of your sight, because what if, I mean, we were in the woods, I know that, but what if somebody steps between you and the target he's going after? He may nail that person. Safety sake, you want to make sure you bite the right person. If you have the preconditions to be able to bite them, same thing with a weapon. You know, despite a lot of the movies, we're not just going to shoot into the woods. You know, who's into the woods? And an M16 rounds, 5.56, it don't stop real soon. It's going for a while. So, yeah, we'd end up probably putting rounds outside the base, which would be a whole different, you know, international incident. But to create a short story out of a very long night that night, I chased whatever this was all night. I mean, sun was coming up. I'm dead tired. Dog's cut up. I'm cut up. That's when I hollered on the radio, hey, honk the horn so I know how we can come straight back because we're done. You know, we're worn out. And I didn't even hear him. I was miles out there. I didn't even know it went that far out. When we came back, this happened several nights over several different shifts, not just my shifts. Nobody could ever get close enough to catch whatever this was. At one point, I saw somebody get in a car outside the perimeter fence. We never figured out what it was. Now, I had been there a long time.
Wait, saw somebody get into a car?
Get into a car and take off, but the Japanese police weren't out there quick enough to be able to stop them. That's a little different issue. But I'd been there a long time, so I had real good relationships with our interpreters who had been there forever. One of the interpreters finally told me, because I was like, I don't know what this is. You know, it can't be a person. Nobody's that good. You know, I'm pretty good. Nobody's that good. And that was a few pounds earlier. But he told me, he said, well, there was a rumor when he was growing up that there was a ninja training school outside of town in Misawa City, which would be up by us. He said, growing up as kids, you know, they believed it. He says, as an adult, you just went, yeah, okay, that's what the old people told us. He goes, you know, was that? I was like, I don't know. I said, I just can tell you no person can do what these guys were doing. And there was at least three of them. And that's
they ran, away in a car. They ran away in a car. So that kind of takes some of the allure that it's paranormal theme. Starts putting you into the, oh my God, what are these people capable of?
Or is it a coincidence? Was somebody else getting in the car after we had been chasing whatever we were chasing? I don't know the answer. I just know nobody's that good.
Wow. I mean, Christine, you hear these tales. I'm watching you nod and big smiles. And for those of you just listening, we are talking via video so I can watch the reactions of my guests, which I love to do. Christine, you hear this. What is your theory? Do you believe that it is a mixture of cryptid creatures, of alien beings, and of ninja warriors hiding in the woods?
It's a mixture. Guarantee you it's a mixture because different people had different experiences with things up there, including, as I mentioned before, a captain and a tech sergeant had a experience with half of a samurai soldier.
Which half?
I like the look.
From the waist up. That's all.
From the waist up. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, was it like they were looking through a portal in time at a samurai soldier, or was it modern day samurai?
No, this was ancient with the armor and the swords. And apparently this samurai soldier, warrior, had been in lockstep with the tech sergeant the whole time because him and the captain were trying to sneak up on a post. And this thing he thought was the captain behind him the whole time was actually something very paranormal.
That's the kind of stuff that gives me the willies, right? When you listen and you know that the military is now unnerved by it, and these aren't just ninja warrior training on the outskirts of Misawa, but you're seeing something through the portals of time, that really starts to engage a different element to what we're dealing with.
Right.
That particular incident was one I was working on. Mm-hmm. And that captain was a really good friend of mine. And so was the tech sergeant. I had went up there. I knew they were pulling an exercise and they were going to get security, you know, tested. And so I figured,
Rob, I don't mean to cut you short. We are literally up against the top of the hour break. I want to hear the whole story and not feel like I'm rushing you in 20 seconds to let us know what's going on. It seems like you've got a lot more cool stuff to share with us. So let's deal with that when we come back. As the night is deepening at Misawa, the encounters have escalated, my friends. Lights in the sky, moving against the wind, figures that appear inside secure areas, places no one should have been able to enter. Military dogs refusing to advance, frozen in fear, staring at something no one else could see. And then there were the moments that follow people home. So in hour two, Christine and Rob Watts take us further into the most disturbing encounters, the ones that didn't stay on base. The phenomena that seemed intelligent, reactive, aware, and the question no one wants to ask. What if Misawa wasn't haunted? What if it was occupied? Hour two begins right after this.